Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this, I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopelessness, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden.
Professor Val here, waiting for my partner to get back. I think he's probably going to be here any second. In the meanwhile, I'm just going to be sending out a quick hello here. Hold on. All right. Nice of you to join us.
Hello!
Jeez. I hope it was good, whatever you were doing.
I am holding several big nut bars, if you want to get the idea how it was over there.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
What am I going to do with you?
A sea of testosterone. You can't beat it. You can't beat it.
I guess not.
I tell you what, I don't know. If estrogen and testosterone had a race, who would win? Actually, first of all, I need to get re-showed here.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I came through the thing. I'm not in the room yet.
No, what do you want
me to
do?
Play the theme song. Play the theme song.
What? Just a minute. Oh, somebody's calling in. Oh, you know who that is? I know who that is.
The guest already?
No. Hello.
Hello.
This is Philo Liz.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Liz, baby. How are you?
Knocked up. Other than that, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, I'll have a little caffeine to go with my alcohol that you can't have.
That's right.
Yeah,
That's
well,
right.
You know what? In Italy, they used to give women a shot of scotch when they were about to give birth, so I'm okay. I didn't know I was pregnant for like 3 months, so I'm thinking it's okay that I drank a little bit in that time.
That's
yeah.
good. I haven't known him. I was a father for the last 14 years.
So how is it going?
I I thought I was just stressing. I conceived and got my period. I don't know how I managed that one, but I conceived it somewhere in the middle of October and still went with my cycle at the end of October. And then I spotted in November, which was evidently the child implanting itself or something like that going on. So I didn't realize I had missed a period until the end of December. And I didn't get to the doctor until about halfway through January. And he was like, so you're 12 weeks. And I was like, am I now? He was like, you're out of your first trimester already. He's like, were you sick at all? And I was like, no, not sick, not fatigued, not emotional any more than, you know, I normally am. And
I got that beat, Liz. my illustrious wife, Anto, went through a 26-week interval of being pregnant and did not know. And thought she had a kidney stone when she had a lock-kneed fetus in her belly because of the involution of the whole thing after the birth of my son a scant 6 or 7 months before.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. The Irish twins, the hard way. That was a 7-10 splunt. Not even a split. It was a splunt.
Yeah, good job there, Mark.
With an N in there.
So, yeah, I had a million and one questions. I was like, I had hard cider over Christmas. I've been eating sushi. I took my pill this whole time. Is this kid going to have three eyes? And he was like, no, it should be okay. He's like, were you into any recreational drug use? And I was like, no. He's like, it's fine. I was like, okay. But, you know, other than being completely terrified and unprepared, I'm good. I'm good to go.
Are you allowed to eat a big nut bar?
I'm getting to the happiness. I'm slowly but surely approaching it. I'm worried about money.
It's really full of honey roasted peanuts, almonds, and cashew goodness.
Yeah.
Would you stop with that? You're making me hungry.
I had to do a commercial for it. I was the biggest sports nut. I told the story of how I peed Wee One in the snow after the Giants won the Super Bowl, and I was in Iowa, and I couldn't share the glory with anyone.
Oh, God.
Nice. The local squirrel population is still celebrating that victory. I went outside, and I was like, Wee One, Wee One! It was like, you know, you're in Iowa, and nobody cared, so I just had to signify by saying I at the time.
Well, that's good.
I'm having a good day. Yep. Devil may care.
So when's the kid going to be?
Oh, God.
July 29th. It's going to be one hot summer for me.
Oh,
is that
man.
Technically a Leo? I don't know how that work breaks down.
July 29th. That's a good question.
To the cusper.
I'm really good with the fall. I'm not so good with the summer.
Because I know Cancer's June, and I know I always associate Leo with August. You're right there.
I think it might be a Leo.
I think you may be right. What's between Cancer and Leo? Something in there?
Mm.
I'm not aware of?
No, I think it's just Cancer and Leo.
And then Virgo is September, right?
July
exactly.
29th?
Yeah.
You know what?
Gemini?
I have
someone check a fact?
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm Googling.
No, burn a window.
But I'm a Philo and he's a Philo, so that means this kid's going to be a Philo.
This kid has got no shot.
Not nearly enough. He likes to pretend he's an Onto, but he's not. He's a complete insecure haunt Philo, just like me. Okay. July.
Is he a Philo?
You have to look at him really close because he Ontos, but no, he's either that or he has severe Philo tendencies as an Onto. No, it's a Leo.
Yeah.
Gonna be a Leo. My kid's gonna be a Leo.
Okay.
What's the date range on that?
You have the Leo date range?
I'm still looking this up. Oh, freaking Madonna!
There we go. July 23rd to August 22nd.
Oh, there you go. There
so
you
I could very well have a Cancer if I go into labor early. But the window they think for me is like July 29th to August 4th.
All those who like to bet on when Final List drops can go to NakedSummer.com and submit their date. We will include a copy of the Semantic Companion for her and her spouse so they can get through the first 30 days of the postpartum period.
I'll have to give you guys a picture of him where you can get a good look at his eyes because he hides behind those glasses, but I really think he's a Philo. Mm.
The hiding behind the glasses is an eco telltale, but that's okay. He could be a cusp.
He's so not an eco. I can absolutely tell you that.
Really?
I know that to be a fact.
His head screwed on straight.
No skeletons in that closet?
Well, skeletons, yes, but ones that he confronts very openly.
Well, that's just an eco that's been tamed.
He's
that's
not
like an ox and a bull.
Between the two of us, he's the down-to-earth one. It's really hard to be an eco and down-to-earth at the same time.
No, we're pretty down-to-earth.
We're just dirty.
We are. We're down in the dirt, playing with it, making mud
dirty.
Pies. That's right.
You know, come to think of it, he did have a lot of imaginary friends as a kid, he says.
Well, we've delved into that dark corner for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck with the morning sickness and all the other fun.
I didn't have any of that, and I'm already
she
in my second trimester.
She skated right by it. Like,
really?
Isn't that unbelievable?
It returns like an evil, some kind of force.
Yeah, everybody tells
me
wait till the next one or wait till I get older. And I'm working on this one, so let's not talk about the next one. But
My wife got sick at 91 when I married her. She stayed that way, so she's...
she doesn't have morning sickness. She has marriage sickness.
She has marriage sickness.
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm not getting married, so there you go.
Started at 91, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to get married. There's no need for it.
You know what? I thought my old school father was going to throw a shit fit about me because it was the first thing out of my mouth. He's like, we sat in the car completely in shock about all the ways that we were having a child, and he went, what do you want to do? And the first thing out of my mouth before I could even think about it was, we're not getting married. And he was like, I agree. And I was like, and it's not because I don't love you. It's because it's a Band-Aid and it doesn't mean anything. I was like, let's work on this kid. And my mother was freaking out. And my father, who I guess knocked up his high school girlfriend and they got a divorce and then knocked up my mother, and that worked out to be like the most loving marriage ever, knows that it can go both ways. So he was like, she was, you know, as far as my mom knows, you get knocked up, you get married, everything works out fine. It never goes awry. And my father, I guess, has the other consideration of it because my mother is his second marriage. So he was like, you know what? if you're sure that you love him, but you just want to feel him out. He's like, were you talking about this before this happened? I said, no, we were not talking about a family. We were not talking about marriage. We were not talking about any of this. We were just being us. I'm like, I clearly do not have a conscious decision in the baby making, but I have a conscious decision in marriage. I'm going to wait. And he was like, you know, it's easy to cut him loose if something should happen. So that's his take on it, and if that's what's going to make him feel better. But I was so surprised that he was supportive about it. My mother was the one who freaked out. But anybody who's in, like, my school of thinking in terms of, you know, not being stuck in 1955 is understanding that I don't want to wake up next to somebody every day for the rest of my life and wonder if he wants to be there. And anybody who's, like, 1960 and before who believes in that, you know, train of thought, because that's not everybody who even came from that generation, but my mom says it's because she's from the old school, is trying to tell me that I'm protecting myself by getting married, and I say that's a bunch of bull. So
yeah, that is bull. That's
doesn't protect
bull.
Me from anything.
No.
So that's what we're doing. We're taking it one day at a time.
Yeah.
And
any
now
contract that begins with the phrase "till death do you part," safety is not something that's really incorporated into the contract.
There you go. That's, you know what? You're damn right.
That's true.
I actually had that stricken from the record during my vows.
You probably did.
Yes.
Until you pissed me off enough to dump your ass.
So I said to the karmic end was my line.
To the karmic end.
In my pagan-esque way, I was already a pagan, my mother said, because I was getting married in a Lutheran church.
Yeah.
I was already practically, you know, courting the devil. She had to cart in some Catholic priest in the middle of Minnesota to do some kind of benediction so that the Vatican would recognize the union.
The power of Christ compels you, Mark.
Yeah, that really worked. That really worked out for you well, Mom. Yeah, you married basically a demon, so that's okay.
I said
to the death do you part. It says to the karmic end, and there was a lot of what in the crowd. And then my Bible reading was, this is full confession night, my Bible reading was actually the book of Job.
So
Anna had this, like, you know, the typical reading of, you know, there's a season, yada, 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 love is this, love is not that, love is that, the whole list, the whole litany from the Bible. And I went with, everything I eat eventually makes me sick, from the book of Job. To the absolute dry heaving of my in-laws.
You know, in all fairness, if your wife didn't know what she was getting into then she deserves everything she
gets. Oh, no, we had already cohabitated and committed all kinds of mortal sins for 4 years, so we were already going to hell.
You were already living in sin?
Yeah, all I got on the little receiving line the way out was, what's with the Job line? I said, you had to be there, man. And it was like 72 times I had to say that. And, you know, I actually got my revenge at my sister's wedding when I sung the little Springsteen thing. And she was, like, absolutely – you want to talk about an Anto who looked like the Chinese flag, white dress, red face.
Oh, man.
While I sang, you know, the little a cappella thing. I tried to get the church to sing with me because, of course, people were shocked that I was doing anything.
What is wrong with you?
Well, I just said, you know, sometimes your brother speaks at your wedding, and sometimes your brother sings at your wedding.
I got to be honest. I'm pretty lucky I'm not related to you.
I'll reprise it here quickly. It was like, should I fall behind, wait for me. And I went, everybody. Nobody sang, except for, like, my daughter and, like, two or three other people.
You know, I can't imagine why that might be.
It was great. All night long I was doing that. A cappella all over the reception. It was great.
Oh.
All right, I see that we have a real caller calling in now who's not pregnant and has some information for
us. As an added bonus, whoever wants to take bets on the soma as well as the sex, because I'm not going to find out until the baby's born.
Wow.
I think there should be
good.
An added incentive for that.
That's
we have
good.
Two bets, one on the sex and one on the date. Okay.
I'm in.
Have a good show, guys.
We will post
Thanks
that on Blog
for
Soma.
Calling,
Thank you, Father Liz.
No problem. Bye, guys.
Peace out, baby.
Keep reproducing, baby. All right.
That was a nice little surprise.
Mm.
Yes.
Nice. Half a nut bar down. I only bit my lip once.
Okay.
I have a lip injury that I swear to God, I could probably lose a quart of blood to this thing.
Oh, God.
Bit my lip the other night when I had that fever.
I got
a fever. And the only prescription... It's for cowbells. And I bit my lip, and I was feeling no pain until that hit. And I blacked out from the lip bite. And I just did it again with the big nut bar. So.
Well, that's what you get for stuffing nuts in your mouth.
An acute exacerbation of a chronic injury.
Uh-huh.
All right. I guess joining us now, I see you holding your hand up there in the interim. You can punch her in there. I'll look for the submarine.
All right. I'm going to punch her in. Get the submarine.
All the way from California, we have brain guru Arlene Taylor. We've been exchanging emails and having a pen pal relationship for about a week now. Joining us here on Summertime. Welcome to our space, Arlene.
Oh,
she's gone. Hello. I don't know what happened. What'd I say? Oh, boy.
At 11, pay more at the grocery.
There you go.
I'll tell you how to get the most.
I just said hello and she hung up.
What are you doing?
Hopefully Arlene's calling back in. Did you catch the number briefly?
I just saw the area code.
Yeah,
oh,
I know
sucks.
I have it here. If it screws up, I have her number here somewhere.
That was very funny.
A classic. That'll be in the 6 month review for sure.
Oh, yes.
Mark that down. Mark that down for the date.
And then next to it, we'll put this here.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Hopefully, Arlene's calling back in frantically. As I would be if I was a guest on a shoe. Let's see. Whoops, that's the wrong link. No, hello. Let's see. No, that's not it.
I can't believe that she disappeared like that. That was very funny.
That was perfect. They gave a great introduction, the whole layup, and then nothing.
We're like, woohoo, hello.
Yeah, she was right there on time.
You know what, we don't have a sound wave of crickets. We really need that.
We need one for all the non-callers.
Yeah,
I thought I was
definitely
shocked that Liz was calling in the beginning of the show.
Wasn't that great?
Kind of disrupted me. Did you expect that?
I hooked up with her on Facebook.
Oh.
And I was chatting with her, and I was like, oh, it's time for the show. Here's the number. Call. And she said, okay.
I'm trying to find the one. There was a link she sent me that. She said that she told me the number she was calling me on. Very strange.
Don't tell me you're going to have to talk to me all night.
They haven't. No, I have no energy for that. I need someone to carry the show.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to be winding down. Let's see.
Winding down with your broken lip?
Yeah, oh my God, you can believe it. It looks like it's horrible.
See,
now I have a 707 number that she said she's going to be calling.
That's
you.
It.
Oh, we're back?
No, but that was the number.
Oh, all right. You want me to call it and see if I can double us in?
Yes, actually.
Hold on, please.
All right. All right. So while we're waiting for that, let's see. What can we do in the meanwhile? All right. Let's see. I got to play some Deadwood. Here we go.
Every day takes figuring out all over again how to fucking live.
That's my heroine there. She's the best. All right, how about this one?
I don't want to talk to these cocksuckers, but you have to. In life, you have to do a lot of things you don't fucking want to do. Many times, that's what the fuck life is. One vile fucking task after another. But don't get aggravated. Then the enemy has you by the short hair.
That's it, life. One vile task after another. Beautiful. All right. Hopefully Mark's working on our guest, Arlene. This is typical of our show here. You gotta love Fitzy. You just have to love him. All right. Mark, come back. He probably ran away. Really don't blame him. Not at all. Oh, here we go.
A credit crunch.
Gotta love it. What haven't we heard in a while?
Yeah.
Let's see. Hello?
Okay. Arlene, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Let's just hope the battery holds out.
All right.
Here we go.
Arlene Taylor here joining us, I guess by hook or crook. we got her on here from, now, a couple of things about Arlene you might not realize. She runs a company called Realizations, Inc., and she was kind enough to send me a couple copies of her books that deal with age-proofing the brain and also age-proofing your memory. So on this show, we deal a lot with the subjectivity of an individual. So we wanted to start off with kind of a little, I don't know what we call it, a trick question. But because you're a brain researcher, you've been out there for a while studying this three-pound universe, give us a working definition of what you would call a healthy individual from a brain researcher's perspective.
You know, that's really a task because there's nothing simple about it. I've thought about that for a couple of days, and so I could probably give you that in, you know, like parts one, two, and three. First part being that the individual knows what his or her brain does and has at least 51% match in his or her life between what the brain does energy efficiently and the type of task person. So that's the first to manage your energy.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And the part of that would be they're consciously a high-level wellness life balance, which means they're committed to taking really good care of their brain, their immune system, their body, in whatever arena we're talking about, physically, emotionally, mentally, socially. And third, they have high emotional intelligence. And my working definition of emotional intelligence is they know what feels good and what feels bad. They know how to get from feeling bad to feeling good in an appropriate and functional manner, and they know how to role model or teach those skills to somebody else. So you put all those together, and that would be my working definition of a healthily functional, successful, happy individual.
All right. Now, if you had a look at the 300-odd million people walking around calling themselves United States citizens, what percentage of them would you say at any point in their life would fit all those criteria?
You know, as I travel around and talk to individuals, a lot of them have pieces of all three at some level, and when you can help them understand that's how you really thrive, they're willing to come forward. What percentage of that? I don't have any idea. But more and more I'm meeting people who really survive, really want to thrive in life.
Mm-hmm. And what I see happening is that the population has sort of moved that definition of healthy to sort of functional. And you got a lot of people out there that are just compensating, and they're dependent on medication. They're dependent even on healthy things like their diet or their exercise program in order to deal with the things you discussed, which is the emotional part. And also this other little thing that's creeped in now is this aspect of the social nervous system where they got to deal with other people. It's one thing to get yourself straight and be able to deal with all the things that go on within the individual, but the fact that we're in relationships, we're in a society.
Yeah, we don't live in a vacuum.
Right, and that affects our well-being as well. So talk about how that, as a brain researcher, because when I came into the brain researcher community, probably early 90s, decade of the brain, and the big thing was the cortex. Everybody was cortex, cortex, cortex. And I was down at the Appalachian conferences. Yeah, of course it's part of it. It's just a little bark on the outside. But I was down there at the Appalachian conferences down there with Carl Pribram and all his fancy friends. And I kept talking about the body and the heart specifically and developmental stuff. And this one guy with a big Texas 10-gallon hat, we were eating outside, you know, corn on the cob, the whole thing at the conference. And I kept talking about cortical facilitation and the cardiac brain and things like that, things I was reading about from HeartMath, early 90s. And the guy just tipped his hat and he said, "This is a brain conference, son." So the brain lived almost in isolation from not just the individual's body, but from the environment it was being influenced by. They were just focusing on Uh-oh.
You know, I think that's how awareness starts. It's usually a little bit unbalanced and too narrowly focused. But I think we're expanding that now, certainly with the research about, you know, 40,000 plus neurons in the heart that think at a subconscious level. So it's really difficult to separate that mind-body piece.
Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with the developmental aspects in terms of not just the physical aspects of how a brain will come into being, but also especially the difference between male-female brain dominance, this other concept called hemisphericity, which is a weird word, but I kind of picked up from some of my buddies around here. Do you make distinctions about that?
Hemisphericity is the concept, basically, that we do have an energy-efficient part of our brain. And for most people, it's going to be either in the left hemisphere or the right hemisphere in one chunk. You know, each hemisphere also has a natural fissure in it, so you come out with four chunks of tissue. And the current belief by many researchers is that we're born with an energy efficiency in one of those four chunks. And if you figure that out and match 51% of your life with tasks that call the functions in that portion of energy efficiency, my goodness, that's how you fly, that's how you thrive, that's how you stay well, avoid, live a long time, and so on and so forth. So I think it's a valid concept, but it's only part of the healthy individual. Because if you don't have exercise, for example, since your brain really doesn't need muscles, exercise is critical to keeping the brain healthy. It's also critical to keeping your heart brain healthy. So everything is connected to everything, and we no longer find it very effective to separate things and talk about them as if they're freestanding entities.
Yeah, that's been the consensus the last maybe 8 or 10 years, is that we've moved from hierarchies to integration and having the systems basically build on themselves, similar to looking at things like spiral dynamics in psychology and sociology, where you're dealing with value systems. How much has, and this is my favorite word, so I mean, how much has mimetics, which is the study of how ideas get transferred, influenced brain research in the last, say, 15, 20 years in terms of what they're looking for marker-wise, what they're looking for in terms of behavior? Have you been seeing that external factor yet, or is it still pretty much a peripheral aspect of what you do?
I don't see it as very central yet, and whether or not it'll ever be central, I don't know. If you subscribe to the belief that every brain is unique, it is different, there are no two identical on the planet in terms of function, structure, or perception, and we actually become more different in terms of brain function as we age, because every thought we think changes the brain, then perhaps how ideas are transmitted is a conscious social awareness rather than necessarily a physical transfer that we'd want to spend much time thinking about.
Well, I think a lot of the reason why that's become popular is because of things like the Internet, which has become an idea, you know, sort of highway, I guess is the lack of a better word, I guess it's been used before, and the advent in the last 4 or 5 years of these social networks where they've sort of replaced search engines, which were sort of impersonal and sort of data-based, now you have almost kind of filtered information coming into people's minds that may not necessarily be like the raw feed where everyone gets to see the same basic first cut and then they go make revisions. Now you have the revisions coming through different channels where someone might get a story from someone from their Facebook page or someone from their AIM account or someone from their MySpace page or someone from their email, and you're getting a whole conglomeration, almost like a mosaic of the same story. Like, just for example, last night they were doing the, this is a good segue actually into the next topic here about neuromarketing, they were tracking Republicans or McCain voters and Obama voters during his speech, using the galvanic skin response to see how they were reacting during his different points of his talk. Well, he gave such a pep rally kind of a talk, and there was, I think, 65 interruptions and 30-odd standing ovations in there, that the both of these groups tracked somewhere in the 90% approval rating of what he was saying. So it's almost like it unfiltered what was going to be this sort of homogenized version of the story where you would expect a right and left leaning almost every paragraph. It kind of both, they both kind of went right down the alley there. So when it comes to...
That does reflect the fact that if you have an energetic presenter and there's some emotion there and you're getting the information through two or more of the senses, it can bypass, if you will, conscious choice and pretty much go into long-term memory and affect your response. And that's one of the problems with getting information in a filtered way, and that's probably still the only way we're going to get information, because all information basically goes through some kind of brain, and there is going to be some of that, but then that does color how you perceive what you think you heard.
Well, what I saw in the analysis of it was that actually it was the same bias I see a lot of times in the brain research that I partake in, is that they discounted the body that was receiving the information. They were focusing on the brain and on ideas and on the cognitive side, where Obama was communicating and he was creating what's called neuroception, which is basically everyone felt safe. No one felt threatened.
Okay, that was fun.
No.
Are you guys back?
Yeah, what happened to you?
We were all disconnected. I was gone from the switchboard. I'm sitting here minding my own business.
Oh,
disconnected.
All right.
So anything you guys were saying got missed.
was the show on the air? We don't even know.
No. If I'm not on the air, you guys weren't on the air either. It wasn't that long, but nobody's number was up on the switchboard.
For like what? Like 10 seconds or what?
Yeah.
I never left the room, so I don't know why it wouldn't be recorded, but maybe not.
I don't know.
We'll all find out later.
Yes, we will.
But just if in case you were glitched out there at about 9:30, what we came to the conclusion was is that in watching the Obama speech last night and the way they were analyzing the brain, we were talking about how ideas influence physiology and this concept of memetics, and that what I was seeing was that the interpretation of the data, which both tracked in the 90 percentile, that nobody got perturbed by what he was saying, was that he was creating what's called neuroception in somatics. It's a principle that you go through developmentally before you really have a brain to make these decisions that makes you feel safe in a given environment. So conceptually, the listeners felt safe. So they both tracked in the 90s because he was, Arlene was saying, was communicating with emotion. He was going in through more than one sensory channel, and that creates a sense of balance for the receiver, so that even if they disagree with him, it was not going to be something that they could consciously react to, so you wouldn't get this stress response from the reading. And this bleeds into the trend in the last 5 or 6 years that technology's caught up to track viewers' response, not just from their verbal feedback, not just from focus groups, but from physiological data. So this concept of neuromarketing has become very, very high-tech. You see it with Super Bowl ads. You saw it last year during the debates. If you watch the presidential debates, they would track every little thing they said. And it's becoming sort of like a collective lie detector, if you will, or, you know, galvanic skin response is really what they're doing.
It's not a lie detector per se, but it's certainly registering what the people's bodies are doing.
Yeah, it's looking at a stressful response to the information going in. So it's like if you're watching the debates, not so much a lie detector that they're saying the truth, but they're detecting something that they polarize to, and you'll see a reaction to them, a stressful response to something someone said. So I remember the one speech we did at SomaCast Live during one of the debates,
when he said that one, when McCain said that one. It was a good groan. Their response was unbelievable. And then last night during the Republican response, when he mentioned Katrina, there was a lot of people that reacted to that because it's still a very visceral, very real experience for a lot of people, just like in New York.
Absolutely, it triggers emotion.
Yeah, just like in New York when Giuliani was running, every other, like what Biden said, his vocabulary consisted of noun, verb, and he mentioned 9/11 because he knew that it would have a reaction to people. And campaigning and the tactics that would use things like fear, basically in the last 4 or 5 years, have given way to this physiology, if you will, of hope. And you saw in the talk last night when he featured the little girl, the eighth grader, talking about we're not quitters, and he personified his ideas almost to the point. Anytime you use a child, of course, that becomes like an iconographic way of demonstrating a principle that was, you know, just like I've seen W do countless times with when he had the people in Iraq when they voted with their purple fingers, you know. So there's a lot of almost, we're getting to the point now where this Mobius strip is almost complete, where we understand that it's like a fish in the water, doesn't know he's wet. A human being is not completely conscious of how many things they're processing at any given moment, but their brain has a way to summarize it for them. And maybe if you could kind of give us a little idea of how does a belief system know it's coherent? How does a belief system know that it's accurate unless it's able to incorporate the body responses? Yeah.
In the first place, you know, it's only that third cortical layer where we really have what we call conscious awareness, cognitive thought. Mm-hmm. Although, having said that, probably less than 5% of what goes on in that brain ever comes to the average person's conscious awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So what is really happening is that the body is taking in all of that, the stimuli, the data, based on the person's belief system, what they're willing to listen to, what they think they agree with. It's going to filter some of that into their conscious awareness. And part of being really functional and protecting yourself, I think, has to do with doing everything you can to increase your awareness, not only of what's coming in, but of how your subconsciously absorbed beliefs and expectations work as a filter to even alter what comes to your conscious awareness.
Mm-hmm. And what I see a lot is, especially when people are not necessarily aware of how deep their beliefs go, when you're talking about things like racial bias or this cartoon we were talking about last week with the New York Post, where people polarized all over the place, almost immediately on seeing this visual input of the two cops shooting this the gorilla, and you had protests in the streets, and you had all kinds of corporate responsible, you know, all kinds of reactions going on, chain reactions going on, where it's almost like we're hitting a filter where we don't even know that those things are, it's like not knowing where the third rail is on the railroad tracks. So there's a lot of undercurrent. Like I said, not if it's not conscious.
There is.
So
one of my favorite sayings is, what you don't know you don't is what trips you up in life.
Mm-hmm. Well, in somatics, we have a little kind of parallel to that. It's not what you know, it's what you notice. What I see happening more and more when it comes to these kind of, I don't know, archetypal, I guess, belief systems, we have race, religion, age,
politics.
Male, female, politics, all these big categories that the marketers use to manipulate purchases and make people almost forget that they have an influence over these things, is that they're sort of, they're almost body based in the way that we hold them. Where,
that's true.
So how do you get to the point where you're socially aware that you could actually kind of catch that before you have that sort of almost like automatic knee-jerk reaction to a cartoon like the one in the New York Post or to any of these high-profile cases?
Well, it's sort of got to be an individual journey. I can tell you what I my pain, and that is I've got some rules by which I live in relation to neuromarketing and subliminal messages and so on. And my first rule is that I only listen to known subliminal tapes, CDs, messages if I also have a complete copy of the script, because I need to know how they are, what words they're using, and whether they're positive words, whether they're negative words, because the subconscious part of the brain will often miss negatives and only perceive the positives. So if I were, for example, listening to a tape that purported to tell me how to stop smoking, but the script actually says, don't smoke cigarettes, the subconscious part of my brain is likely to miss the don't and will actually get the message, smoke cigarettes, so I will be reinforcing maybe don't want to have it. Secondly, if I know somebody is neuromarketing, I'm really only going to subject myself to that if I'm really already interested in their products and believe it's something that will help me and is meets my ethical standards. And thirdly, I rarely purchase anything anymore on the spur of the moment because of the neuromarketing impact. I'll get the information. I'll make myself wait 48 to 72 hours. If I've got any concerns about it, I'll discuss that with other individuals whose brains I trust, because I personally want to minimize the impact of neuromarketing that's going to push me to do things that I might really not want to do had I had more conscious control over the information.
And again, you're rare in the sense, because a lot of people, it's implicit. I mean, you just look at any advertising where they had a study, I guess a couple weeks ago, that men looking at beautiful women will put that input in their brain as if it's an object. It might as well be a chair. It might as well be just an inanimate object to them. When they see a beautiful woman, they look
exactly
at them as an object, literally, in the brain. So anything
it
you put
objectifies.
Yeah. Anything you put to associate with that image, they're going to connect and make a neural association with, and they're going to opticode, as we talk about sometimes, and make that association. So every time they see that image of the product, they're going to think of the woman. And they're going to make a copy of that every single time, and they're going to say, if I get the, if I choose this beer, I get that woman. If I choose this brand of jeans, I get that woman. And it's literally appealing to them at almost at a sort of like a mammalian level, where they're saying, here's the chum, guys. And it's like it's almost like a visual pheromone where it's going in, but they're not aware of it because they don't understand that they're doing that. So a lot of people go around. I mean, you see even magazine ads where they'll have the word sex lit like in the ice in a glass of vodka, you know, all these things that are subliminal, but they're visual. They're not just done in spoken language. You're talking about on tapes, things like that, hypnosis tapes. And I just think a lot of people are just content to stay in the trance because it takes, like you're saying, a lot of conscious effort, a lot of social rules, and a lot of sort of active participation to filter that stuff out, because that's where the infomercials are popular. That's why they can make almost any device that's going to help somebody lose weight without any work. The ab roller, the ab this, the ab that, all of them don't work. There's always some guy says one works better than the other. They're all basically doing the same variation of the theme. But people continue to buy these things because they want the short-term gratification. They're buying into a set of images that are, I call them strings without balloons. They're just a bunch of strings, and the strings are attached. And then what happens is they get burned, like a self-help industry is a perfect example. They get burned 16, 17, 18 times in a row, but they'll always go back because the images and the infrastructure, the way that message is sent and framed to them, is basically the same. So it's like catnip.
But there's only one way that I think you change that. People who choose not to change, they're comfortable in that arena. But the only way I know of to change that is to increase the individual person's awareness of how they get bombarded, and do they want to just give up their, you know, the work it takes to be cognitively functional and just go with the flow, they willing to do something about it. And the only way I know to begin to make a dent in that is exactly what you're doing, and that is talk about it. Increase personal awareness. Increase the knowledge, because knowledge is power. And when you do that, there will be a certain percentage of individuals who go, oh, my goodness, I even realized that. I'm going to be more aware. No, you are never going to change it for everyone. But I believe it can change for some people if they get the information.
Well, I think, you know, people like yourself that are out there presenting it to them, you know, it's a testament to your dedication and the fact that you and your own personal journey have benefited. It really comes down to that, to me, as we talk about a lot on the show. Most people out there have a bias towards other people's experiences, and that, to me, is it's sort of a visceral truth, if you will, where if it worked for one, it can work for more, and, you know, that's one of the things that always seems to kind of cut through. That's why Obama, you know, brought this little girl out last night. That's why you always see, if you could personify a principle like that with a real human life that's existed, that's why testimonials always work better than advertising. So the more the human element comes in,
But there is good news. The good news is that the research shows that it only takes 5% of any group who catches vision and starts listening to information to make a change for the whole group. Now, whether or not your program is going to hit 5% of the population in the area, I don't know. But it is a start, because all has to happen is one person, one brain, the picture of, wait a minute, do I want to sit here and knowingly allow myself to be manipulated, or do I want to take responsibility for altering that pattern? And I watch groups of people who start talking about it change for the better, for the positive. And that's the reason I keep doing this, because it will make a difference in some people's lives.
And like I said, that to me is what gets you out of bed in the morning, is that you know the feeling, what it's like when you see somebody freed up by it and not to be a victim of it anymore. And I know a lot of people that know they're being victimized about it, but they can't avoid it. It's almost like I said, they just keep going into this neurological cowlick where they just keep using the same behaviors, expecting to get a different result. So they always try a new exercise plan. They make New Year's resolutions. They do the same every year. They come out with the bikinis in March and April. And they go, oh, I got to go drop 25 pounds.
That reflects low emotional intelligence. And part of my definition of the healthy individual is they're working on raising their emotional intelligence so they don't just keep repeating things over and over again and expecting a different result. I mean, that is our definition of insanity, right?
Yeah, and I would say that there's a lot of registered voters that fill in that blank because you see the way that they act. A lot of times they have a kind of a groupthink mentality, and it's difficult for them to slow down the pace of life enough to make decisions that aren't in that reactive mode. And having tools like you're talking about and we kind of delineated here tonight gives them a start. So, all right, so just to kind of sum up, because we got kind of started off a little bit out of the gate a little late, what is the number one thing out of all the things you've written and experienced that you think is a common misconception about the brain that you can clear up on our airways tonight and it can travel all over the Blog Talk Radio network for us?
Well, when I travel around the world and lecture to lots of people, I think the number one myth is that you can read somebody else's mind, in essence, or that you expect another person's brain to think like yours. It is never going to happen. Your brain is as unique as your thumbprint, and all you have is your brain's opinion. And once you get that, you just had your last argument, because when people argue, one brain thinks it really knows, and if it, you know, talks louder and longer and throws in some coercion and so on, maybe that blank, blank other brain will get it. So, you know, you give up that expectation right off the bat. And secondly, you understand that you can be the master of your brain at some or you can sophisticate that, and whatever your brain feels like doing at the moment, just follow the line. And that, to me, is pretty scary.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about that out loud, that almost eliminates a lot of the ways that people analyze themselves in terms of their ethnic background, their religious makeup, what part of the country they live in, who their neighbors are. All these categories that get in people's heads that almost force them to give up a lot of their individuality before they even know who the heck they are. So
that's true, and that's one of the problems with growing up in any environment is that you are socialized. However, as we get older and our brain gets more mature and we get more information, we're always going to be impacted by socialization. But we don't have to allow that socialization to run our lives, and we can choose to make different choices when the socialization was inaccurate or results in poor outcomes. You know, we're not locked into doing something just because we were socialized to think that way. We can, we are able to change that.
Well, believe me, you've only known about you a little bit, and I'm already like knee deep in some of your work and the website, and you can go catch a lot of Arlene's work over on her site, arlenetaylor.org. She's got a tremendous amount of resources up there. Like I said, she presents around the country. She has her own system that she's developed that explores a lot of this brain developmental stuff that you can tap into over there. And I really want to thank you for coming on the show. You have a wealth of information. Hopefully have you back soon. And thanks for joining us here in summertime.
My pleasure. Great fun talking to you about these things, because often there's no right or wrong. There's just perhaps a little bit better way to do something, and it starts with dialogue, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll keep exchanging information with you, get you on the Soma Space Super Safe Network, and get you in touch with some of our other high-end brain people. We got a conference coming up next month in Springfield, Massachusetts. You might know some of the presenters from coming in from the West Coast, so maybe we can connect some dots here and keep the conversation going.
Great fun. Have a great
Thanks,
evening.
Arlene.
Yep, take care, Arlene.
Take care. Bye. All right, she has some good info.
Yeah. Am I by myself here?
I don't know. Are you?
Oh, there I go. Okay.
There you go.
This is a revolution, damn it. We're going to have to offend somebody.
There you go.
What a great show that was. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a couple minutes left, and it's 2 minutes and 14 seconds to go in Toronto. The Rangers are tied with the Leafs 1-1 of the soccer game going tonight with the Rangers with a new coach, which was a big topic at the FAN thing I was at. Everyone was doing their sports rants. Like I said, I gave my pee story about the Giants Super Bowl. So we'll the last minute or so of play here for overtime. You know, hockey is the most annoying sport to watch when your team stinks. Baseball, you can just sleep. Football, you can rant and scream at the TV and yell at the ref and stuff. Hockey, you just got to take it. Your team stinks and that's it. It's like, you know, that chant in Little League, we want to pitch another belly itcher.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You got a minute and 25 seconds to go here. It's just, you know this is going to end ugly. You know this is going to end ugly. Now, the Rangers have an Anto goalie. Holy crap, who's just furious at his team. He's constantly yelling at his team as they skate around his net. You wet bastards. You can just see him saying that. Swedish guy, Lundqvist. So anyway, we got a lot covered tonight in terms of connecting some of the dots that we've been, if you guys have been even quasi-listeners to the Summertime Hour, where Arlene is brain, which is nice. She's a brain researcher. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've had other guests come on the last couple of weeks and talk about things, not just from the internal perspective of how we process stuff, but how we interpret things with the mind. And we didn't get to make a distinction between mind and brain because, you know, it gets into semantics. And we've had the shrinks on the show. Like, a working definition for a shrink of a mind is way different than what a brain researcher would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arlene would say you can't have a mind unless you have a brain. You know, if you don't have a brain, there's no mind. And, of course, if we had like a pagan on the show, you wouldn't even need a body to have a mind.
So, that's right.
Right. Who needs a body?
We are spirits in a body.
Right.
We're not a body with a spirit in it.
There you go. You lay that on a brain researcher, and he goes and gets you some Seconal.
A little Haldol, perhaps?
Yeah, a little glue to sniff. You know, but that's the thing, is that when you're dealing with ideas, like we're talking about with Obama, you know, these things are an atmosphere. They're part of the mimetic universe in terms of the way that they travel. And so how does an idea get your attention? And somatics, because somatics doesn't care about any of this stuff, it actually chunks up and says, organism. It's an organism, Wilbur. You have an environment. And that environment is on the inside of the organism and on the outside of the organism. And every time that organism interacts, there's an eternal exchange. So then in if you chunk it all down, this thing has no beginning and no end. And it gets, that's why if you go to somaspace.org, you will see the Soma spiral, which can be spinning either direction at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my fancy...
The fuck you bullshitting me for?
Way of describing
that's
what we're
nice.
Doing. That's right. I'm sure Alina loved that on the archive.
Well, she's also going to love what I was playing while you were trying to hook up with her on the archive.
When I was doing what?
When you were trying to hook up with her when she got disconnected there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, well, I was playing all kinds of stuff. It was very
didn't hear
inappropriate.
Anything. That's okay. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
So
now you're just filthy and vulgar.
Holy cow. So anyway, I'm going to close with a little opening just to play us out here a little bit, because next week we have a variation on the theme. We're not sure who's coming in. We could have Martha Eddy, a extraordinary sape in the Soma Arts. Are you kidding me? Oh, okay, that was a replay, sorry. We're in overtime now in Toronto as we listened in 3 minutes ago. We could have her on. We could have on a guy that's from the Institute of Personal Reinvention. Who knows? It's a coin flip here on Summertime next week. But we will be here.
Yes,
I will try not to have. I will try not to have four beers in me. You know, there won't be any WFAN specials next week. But
no,
I'll be drunk on the usual things. Life. So let's see if this plays. Let's see if it. Let's just check. It. It's kind of loud.
That was so loud.
Lower this down. Hey! Even lower. Let's go down to 18%. Hey, baby! All right. So I'd like to thank our guests, Ollie and Dale, for joining us, and Final Liz for joining us. Again, if you want to bid, when Philo gets sex with the baby, what it is, male, female, or when she's going to drop, sometime in July, email us at nakedsoma@gmail.com, and we will reward you with many web goodies, including the fabulous somatic companion.
Yeah, you might want to say that again, because the music was still kind of loud, and I missed what you said.
I was talking like a commercial there. Anyway,
I know.
If you want to bid when Philo Liz, oh, look at this. If you want to bid,
that damn stupid
watch
thing.
It overtime. Wait, if you want to bid when Philo Liz is going to find out the sex of the baby, male or female, or when she's going to drop the child in July, her little Leo, you can send us your dates and the sex of the baby to nakedsoma@gmail.com. We will reward you with a complimentary desktop version of the Somatic Companion, our 30-day emotional makeover. So there you go. There's another fast, action-packed hour of somatic fun. Now, I am scurrilously excoriating the homepage at somaspace.org as we are going to be wheeling out many new goodies in the coming weeks over on Somaspace. So check that out. And if you're not, go and take yourself a look over at blogsoma.net for some more information about the Somatic Method, a TSM, as it were. And remember,
I tell you this, no eternal reward will forgive us now for wasting the dawn.
So call your mother. We'll see you next week. You never know when she's going to move home from across the country.
That's
right. Have a light, Sapiens. See you next
week. Bye-bye.